Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, babe.
It's Aisha Christina. Nice to meet you.
This is Quality Queen Control.
What is happening?
Today's guest is super inspirational as she has attained success in being a multiple six-figure entrepreneur and Forbes Coaches Council member. She's a financial educator and speaker and the founder of the Lead Wealth Summit, where she helps people to build tangible and sustainable wealth from growing up on food stamps and being below the poverty line. I am eager and excited for today's episode because I know how intimidating and overwhelming the subject of money and finances can be. Cultivating financial literacy is fundamentally invaluable, and I'm super excited to introduce to you all Hannah Koenig and have her share her story from poverty to prosperity and to inspire us all and offer tangible tools to financial independence and equip us with the tools to start our own wealth journey, regardless of our financial setbacks and circumstances, to shift our financial future. Hannah, how have you been feeling lately?
So good. So exciting. Excited. My wealth event that I do every year is happening as we record this podcast. So there's a lot of great energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm just excited to be here with you. I've got the fireplace on. It's getting a little cold, which is not my favorite, but we're bundled up. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, you look very cozy. Where are you from, actually?
I'm in Kansas City. So I'm in the Midwest. I actually grew up in northern Wisconsin, but wow. I've been here since 2005. Spent a little time doing the nomad thing and traveling the world, mm-hmm. And working remotely. I also lived on the East Coast for a while, and then I ended up back here.
Oh, nice. Now, one thing that I want to say that sticks out to me is that you educate people on creating financial sustainability. And I would love for you to share your story about experiencing poverty and how you began to build the life that you have today.
That's such a great question. When I was growing up, we were definitely below the poverty line. We were on, at the time, it was called the WIC program, food stamps. And not only did we not really have a lot of financial resource, I had terrible modeling around how to be in relationship with money. Like, my parents were constantly fighting about money. I watched my dad make a lot of really, really questionable and concerning financial choices. And so it felt so confusing, and it felt hard, and it felt like this thing that certain people had and other people didn't. And I wasn't one of those people. And in my 20s, I really, really struggled, and I made pretty much every financial mistake a human can make. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't sent money to a Nigerian prince. I joke about that, but like pretty much everything else I have done maybe twice.
Oh,
and eventually I turned to entrepreneurship because I thought that money was the problem. Mm. And I thought, if I just have more money, we'll be good. And to an extent, that is true, right? Having your basic needs met, going from the type of income where you can't meet your basic needs to having your basic needs met and beyond,
yes,
is a significant difference. And what I realized when I started earning and I started, you know, it was very financially empowering to be like, I can create the type of income I desire. Mm-hmm. But then I had all of this cash flow and I hadn't changed my way of relating to money. Mm. I hadn't changed my habits and behaviors, and I hadn't changed a lot of deeper internal narratives about money. And so I then ended up with more money and on sort of the reverse side, where it just felt like I was working so hard to just keep continuing to buy nice stuff or fly myself first class. and have a cute bag. Mm-hmm. And then what? But I was like, this is way too much output for, and I didn't feel wealthy and I didn't feel super supported, and I didn't have a system with money. I didn't really have a relationship with money. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, oh, this gets to shift. Mm-hmm. That's what I was done. I'm like, I'm done with this being hard. I'm done with this being confusing. I'm done being afraid mm-hmm. of like what happens 6 months from now. Cause I'm an entrepreneur and I can't see 6 months in the future. I have a plan, but I don't have a guarantee. Yes. And I'm done just mindlessly stacking and spending cash, right? Mm-hmm. I want to respect my effort. I want to respect my work. I want to respect myself by respecting this tool that can support me.
Yes. Wow. I love that. And it's so funny that you started talking about those beliefs around money and the relationship with money, because that actually leads me to my next question. And I do have to admit that financial literacy, even for myself, is super overwhelming. I mean, you know, from credit to budgeting, investments, and just changing my own limiting beliefs around money. I mean, the first time I've ever heard of the term money blocks, I'm like, oh my gosh, that really resonated with me, because I'm sure I have them. We all do. And so what would you say that with your limiting beliefs around money, what did you do to eliminate those fears and to better that relationship that you have with money?
Well, first, I just want to acknowledge you, because it takes a lot of courage to admit that. And especially for women, often admitting that we don't know feels like a failure in and of itself. It's like a test we haven't passed. And some of this is systemic. So I just want to acknowledge that, that there is not a lot of welcoming financial education or even financial products or institutions that acknowledge women as incredibly financially powerful. Mm-hmm. And when your environment doesn't encourage or support you or mirror your power to you, it's not uncommon to internalize that and to think that the problem is you. And the problem is not always you, but you can take responsibility for creating the solution. Mm-hmm. So that brings me to the answer to your question, which is, at some point, I had done enough inner work, and I had done like all of the inner work. You talk about money mindset, money blocks. Like, I had done all of the manifestation courses. I bought like the right crystals. I had like the sage. I knew the full moon ritual to call in abundance, like anything but acknowledging my behaviors and taking accountability and actually looking at the numbers. Those were the things that I wasn't willing to do. And at some point I realized that like I could no longer, or not that I could no longer, because I could have continued, but that blaming my circumstances, blaming what my parents did or didn't give me was not going to get me where I wanted to go.
Right.
And I knew I was capable. Right. I'm like, I might not know, but I know I'm capable of learning. Mm-hmm. And that was really humbling. And in that, it was like, this is going to be uncomfortable. And I am afraid, but I am willing to look at how I'm showing up and to acknowledge where I am creating the experience that I'm having and learn how to shift that. So a lot of that had to do with actually looking at the numbers, but on a deeper level, it had to do with looking at and acknowledging my own internal narratives, my behavioral patterns, the excuses I made for myself, which is not fun, right? And it required like a whole lot of patience and compassion and a huge attempt not to shame myself for getting it wrong. Yeah. And from that, I learned resilience. I learned that, oh, hey, you know, as the person who's fucked it up so many times, I hope I can say that here. if I fuck it up, I can figure it out because I'm still standing.
Yeah. I love that so much, because it's so important, our relationship with money. And a lot of the times we do think that it's all external, but to some degree, the environment in how we perceive money affects how we actually, our relationship with it presently. And it's interesting because I don't think that many people are aware of the terms limiting beliefs or money blocks or anything. Because when I first heard of it, I just knew intuitively, okay, this is something that I definitely have. What is this cycle that I keep on, you know, going through where it's like the same thing that you mentioned. As an entrepreneur, there is no guarantee of I'm going to make X amount of dollars next month or whatever that you can want to do those things, but you don't really know. And so for whatever reason, especially, I love what you mentioned in the beginning where you were saying when you have the abundance and the ability to take care of all your basic needs effortlessly, you sort of have the tendency to just overspend a lot of the time or overindulge because you haven't had it like that before. And so it's difficult to kind of come up with that system while understanding that you have to unpack what is it that's making me act like this? What are my beliefs around money? So I'm sure that we've all heard of the term, it takes money to make money. And I can't lie, in my own experience, I often find that has proven to be the case where there's always an initial investment as it pertains to the pursuit of the things that anyone wants to do. And I remember even with my own YouTube channel and becoming a content creator, I had to have the editing program and I felt like I had to have the best one, which is Final Cut Pro X. And I knew I had to have the ring light and that all costs money. And I'm very curious as to what your thoughts are in regards to that statement of it takes money to make money, because oftentimes I feel like when people share their journey, there's still a bit of confusion as to how they literally started from the absolute bottom to building that momentum into sustainable wealth, especially because, like I said, as an entrepreneur, there are many ups and downs and highs and lows in income.
This is such a beautiful question. And I am such a fan of talking about the middle.
Yeah.
Because that's never what you see. You see the rags and then you see the riches and you're like, I didn't see you wearing the Old Navy flip-flops.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't see you shopping at Aldi. right. You didn't see the in-between. And so what I will say is it doesn't always, you know, you said it costs money. It's not always money, but there always is a cost. So I think that's what we keep in mind first and foremost, right? It may be when I started, I was very scrappy because I didn't have so many of the things that a lot of the people who are leading in my space did. I didn't have fancy branding. I didn't have a bunch of money to shell out on a website. I didn't have 10K to drop on a Forbes feature or whatever, the things that people were doing at that time. I didn't have money to go buy a designer handbag so I could look like in front, like I had it all together. But what I did have was tenacity. Mm-hmm. What I did have was drive. What I did have was an insane work ethic. And I had a lot of what I call give a shit, right? Like I knew that I could care more. I knew that I could work harder. And that came at a cost at that time. Mm-hmm. That came at a saying no to certain events. That came at a, actually, I'm not going to go out for craft cocktails with my girlfriends, but would it be okay if we just, you know, split a bottle of wine in my living room? Mm-hmm. So it did come at a cost. And as I continued, and I think one of the things that's most important that so many entrepreneurs miss, because you can jump into the entrepreneurial space and be like, oh, and you need this. Oh, and you need that. Oh, and you need great photos. Oh, and you need X, Y, and Z. And you're like, wait, but I haven't even made money yet. And I have seen behind the businesses of so many entrepreneurs who look like they have a very successful business and they have a They've built a following and they're making no money because they haven't done the most essential thing, which is to master their cash flow, right? Mm-hmm. To know what is your business model and how is that going to support and sustain you? Mm-hmm. Once you figure out how to earn, then you can manage that money and you can create intentional processes and plan for profit and create cash flow management to say this percentage is going to continue to go back into the business. So yes, there will be some startup costs, but it doesn't have to be huge depending on your business model. You know, if you have inventory, that's a different conversation. But if you are a service provider, if you are a consultant, if you are a brand ambassador, or you're doing brand partnerships and you're coming into the influencer space, or if you're an educator, then you can keep your startup costs pretty low because you don't have physical product and you may not need a physical location and you can use your skill set to move you forward, but it will cost you more effort. It will cost you more time. Mm-hmm. And then as you begin to earn, you invest portions of that money back into the business to upgrade your processes, to optimize your systems, to bring in that branding specialist, right? And when you do that, I find, or at least for me, it gave me greater appreciation for the money I made. And it helped me be a better boss, and it helped me be better at hiring and better at making decisions. So because I knew how certain processes worked, even with, I have a tax professional and I still study tax strategy for entrepreneurs. One, because I'm a finance nerd, but two, because then when I go to meet with him, I can ask him, are we doing this? How are we doing this? What is our plan for this? Can we create a this? And if I didn't, he may not bring those things up on his own, right? That's my responsibility. And there are a lot of people that phone in their 9-to-5, but I'm not available to phone in what I want to create and what I want to do with my money and the impact that I want to have. So again, like taking responsibility for that. And when you are small and scrappy, when you have to become resourceful, you learn quicker, you see things differently. So it may seem like a disadvantage, but whatever you think your disadvantage is has potential to be leveraged as your greatest asset.
Oh my gosh, that is so good. I mean, wow, thank you so much for that response. I mean, so many things that you said resonated with me. In particular, to start with, ladies and gentlemen, I want you guys to all know and note that numbers online does not equate to dollars. There are tons of influencers, creators out there that can't convert their audience into, you know, customers, essentially. That conversion rate is super low. The knowledge of even the fact that that's possible. You know, I've had experiences, to be transparent, even in my own journey, and I've been doing this for just about 3 years. And I remember I came out with a merch line and I thought, okay, surely I have like X amount of subscribers. I'm at least going to make like 5,000 sales. No, like absolutely not. And it was a little discouraging for me. And then I had another experience where I created a Patreon account. I put so much effort into building that extra content. And I was super stressed out about it because a part of me also was kind of glad that it didn't work out. I'm not going to lie, because it was so overwhelming for me. And at the time, my primary focus was just my free content on YouTube. And at the time, this girl that worked for me, she was incredible. And she was like, Aisha, you need to try and like have like more of a subscription service. And I felt guilt around that my relationship with money. And I was just like, no, like, I feel bad. Like, I don't want people to have to pay for essentially the same thing that they're paying for, that they're getting for free on YouTube, whatever the case is. And ultimately, that was not really the conversion rate of my Patreon was, it was just embarrassing. And although I was relieved that I did not have to do the work, that did not It wasn't lost on me, I guess I should say, that I felt like those experiences where I tried to, I guess, triumph in those ways and put out my own thing and sell my own product, that I felt like it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So then that added to the burden that I was carrying of my relationship with money. And so that really put me in a space where I felt like I had to do a lot of research on how to, you know, stop perpetuating that cycle. And honestly, that's why I was super excited to have you as a guest, because I'm genuinely learning, as I'm sure that my, you know, I call them angels, my angels, as my angels are too, where it's like, we need to know this knowledge, especially as women. Books that we read, all these different things. It's so overwhelming. It feels like the knowledge, because it almost feels like, okay, you're either the girl that's good at math or you're just like the creative, and I'm the creative. So
let's talk about that.
Yes. Can we please? Like, it just feels like so over my head, and it's just so intimidating, even for myself still. Like, I'm still working through that. And so that leads me to my next question. Like, what would you say are some actionable steps to building credit if it's poor?
Okay. So, and I do want to mention, math anxiety is real. And we can talk about some of the stats for women, because that's also real. But credit, again, credit is an amazing tool. And there's an awesome resource. It's called Sequin. And that the founder, Vrinda Gupta, she's actually one of the speakers on my summit, but they have tons of free education. So I highly encourage going and checking them out. I have no affiliation. They don't pay me to say that. First and foremost, check out your credit score. You can use Credit Karma. It's free. And just look and see what is on there before trying to fix your score. Just look and see, because often there are things on there that aren't accurate. And if they're not accurate, then I encourage you to dispute them. And credit mistakes happen, and it should be just something you're keeping an eye on. You know, you could have had identity theft and not even known. And then it shows up on your credit score and you're like, wait, or you don't even look at your credit until you go to buy a home or until you're applying for a job and the company wants to know what your credit score is, or you're trying to get a lease on a car. So credit is a tool. I encourage, if you can, to keep your balance on your credit card under 10%. A lot of people think it's 30%. A lot of people think, and this is a very common myth, that you should hold a balance and that you need to hold a balance to build your credit. That is not true. That is a lie. That is not true at all.
Wow.
Don't do that. Right?
Yeah.
So if you are going to use credit, use it as a tool and use it for, you know, a credit card, right? Use it for things that you can pay for in cash. So I have a debit card. I've never used it. I've got one for my business. I've got one for my primary personal account. I use my credit cards for everything because I love credit card hacking. I love using the points, and I pay them off once a week. Wow. Every Friday, my credit cards get paid off in full. I did not used to do this, right? But I have learned this the hard way. I have maxed out, starting with retail cards when I was like 18. I've maxed out cards. I've had cards go to collection. I spent a lot of time repairing my credit. I've also, even when I had money, still had a weird emotional, psychological relationship with taking that money that was in the bank account and using it to pay off the credit card. And so I would maintain a super high balance. And that means you're just paying a ton of money in interest. So credit card interest rates are some of the highest interest rates of any kind of borrowing you can do. And an interest rate is essentially what it costs to borrow money. So compared to a car note or a mortgage, or even, you know, some personal loans or small business loans, credit cards are often varying from like 16 to 30%. That is very expensive money. So you want to use that as basically, you want to use it as a debit card.
Yep. Makes so much sense.
You want to pay off your balance at least once a week. You want to shoot for below 10%. That's going to give you amazing credit. And the reason you want to pay off your balance every week is because you don't know when your credit card company is going to report to credit bureaus. Mm-hmm. So that increases the likelihood that they continue to report your usage super low.
Oh, yeah. This is such a good tip. Wow. Wow. You really do this. This is your thing for sure.
I love it.
Yeah. I really love this too, because I, for a long time, have tried to dibble and dabble into the whole financial literacy thing. It's still a passion of mine, but mm-hmm. I still do find the subject to be a little intimidating. I guess this brings me back to what you were going to mention about mm-hmm. these statistics in math anxiety. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So math anxiety is real. And often you see around the middle school age, girls start to or stop being encouraged to pursue maths and sciences. Mm-hmm. And you see as a majority, young girls receive very different cultural cues mm-hmm. around money, finance, math, and science. So we're sort of cultured out of those fields of study. We mm-hmm. tend to internalize that. And statistically speaking, let's just talk about the gender wealth gap, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the ways that this shows up in our adult lives. For every 35 cents of wealth women have across the board, their white male counterparts have a dollar.
Wow.
And when you add layers of marginalization onto that, or different layers of identity, when you intersect that with race or sexual orientation, if you are, you know, an immigrant or a first generation American, those numbers get even smaller. For Black women, they hold a penny to every white man's dollar of wealth. And when I'm talking about wealth, I am talking about your net worth. I am talking about assets. I'm talking about equity. I'm talking about a stock portfolio, right? This amount of value that you hold that creates an abundance of options, mm-hmm. opportunity, and access.
Wow.
What's interesting about this is, because there are a lot of narratives in mainstream finance that try to explain the reason why there's a huge disparity in this gap mm-hmm. that don't actually take accountability, that put out information that's really blaming, like, well, it's because women are risk averse. It's because they buy too many lattes. They like avocado toast. They buy shoes, right? Like, women just aren't interested in building wealth. Mm-hmm. Not true, right? It's not because we're not good at it. It's not because we're not interested. Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, we outperform men as investors. We are statistically better to lend to. We hold the majority of purchasing power in our households across the board. So women have this immense amount of financial power, mm-hmm. but what happens is that it consistently goes unacknowledged, or the spaces where this type of information is shared is not welcoming. It's jargony, or you don't want to be mansplained or talked down to. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, ooh, but maybe I won't put myself in a space that I don't feel acknowledged, accepted, encouraged, supported, mm-hmm. safe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I absolutely agree with that. As women, I know the number one thing that we want is security.
Mm-hmm.
We want mm-hmm. that security. And so it is easy, I guess, because we are, I don't know if the correct term would be cultured out of it at such a young age, that we put that reliance on our male counterparts mm-hmm. instead. So I can definitely see that happening. And speaking of investments, actually, I am very curious, what are your opinions about investments, whether it's the Roth IRA or cryptocurrency or NFTs?
So the sooner you can start, the better. A lot of people think that you have to have a lot of money to start investing. This is not true, right? You can start today with $20. Mm-hmm. Something is better than nothing, especially if you are in your 20s. If you can put 10% of your income into investments right now, you're going to be leaps and bounds ahead mm-hmm. in terms of your options for retiring or for whatever you want to do with your wealth, mm-hmm. right? And money gets to be the reason you get to say yes to the things that matter to you most. Money gets to be the reason that you get to prioritize your dreams and your goals mm-hmm. over, mm-hmm. you know, over your circumstances. So I am a firm believer in just getting your feet wet, right? You do not, it's not Wolf of Wall Street. You don't have to become a day trader. You don't have to start studying different companies and timing the market. You don't have to do any of that. And actually, this is one of the many reasons that women statistically outperform men as investors is because we tend to do what's called buy and hold, which is we just purchase or we just put money in and mm-hmm. then we leave it alone. And we're not as emotional or impulsive in pulling money out when the market is up or down or any of that. So I recommend starting small and starting simple with something like a 401k mm-hmm. or an IRA. Mm-hmm. And then I recommend, so you have to put money in there. And then there's a second part of that process. You have to invest that money. Because if you don't actually then invest that money, once you put it into your 401k or your IRA, then it's just sitting there like a savings account, which means it's not actually growing. Mm-hmm. So in that second step, I recommend starting with mutual funds or index funds. Mm-hmm. So an index, for example, would be like the S&P 500, mm-hmm. which is the top 500 companies, publicly traded companies in the market, mm-hmm. or a mutual fund, which is a collection of stocks. If you think about, if you have $10, you could put that $10 in one bucket, or you could get it all in change and you could put it in a bunch of different buckets. And this diversifies your assets. It's like, oh, I have a tiny bit of ownership in all of these spaces, mm-hmm. which gives you more opportunity to grow and build wealth, right? It mitigates risk. So starting with something simple like an index fund or a mutual fund, and then automating that process. Mm-hmm. So putting it on repeat, autopilot, where mm-hmm. a certain amount, even if it's a small amount, automatically comes out of your check or comes out of your account, just like your rent does or your car payment. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, me prioritizing future me is a non-negotiable.
Yes.
Right? Because I'm prioritizing my well-being now. Yeah. You know, there's a roof over my head. There is food in the refrigerator, right? The lights are on, all of these things. I'm prioritizing me now, but I'm also prioritizing me in the future.
Yeah.
And then you just think about it that way, where it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. And then as you get comfortable with that process, you can begin to explore and expand more, right? You can actually look at maybe do I want to buy a few single stocks in a company that I know a lot about, that I know is doing really well. I do not recommend jumping into things that don't have a proven track record without developing an understanding of them. So like crypto and NFTs, I think it's really exciting. It is likely the future of money. And even the best, you know, most experienced expert investors I know only have a small percentage of their investment portfolios in things like that. Because if you don't understand it, if it's super volatile, you don't need to compromise your future
right
for this kind of like quick win. And if it sounds too good to be true, there's a chance that it might be, right? Like big risk equals big reward. And you want to, at least when you're starting out, you want to have an understanding of the risk and of the reward. And so it's better to be conservative until you understand what you're getting yourself into, kind of like with entrepreneurship. I mean, nobody starts a business knowing what they're getting themselves into. Right. Not really. You can't know. But that also doesn't mean you're going to take out $1 million loan without a business model or a plan.
Exactly.
And yeah. And likely somebody wouldn't give you that loan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love what you mentioned about not diving into something that really doesn't have that much of a track record. I mean, we've all witnessed the discovery of NFTs and cryptocurrency and buying real estate on the internet as though we're about to hop in, you know, through the computer screen and live in it. Like, it was just so, I was like, how is this real that people are so bold in doing this? But a lot of the people that we heard that were investing so much, they had that income. And I think that the people that heard about this quick sort of get rich thing with the NFTs, you know, because I even know my brother has like dabbled in it here and there because it's like buy this picture. I don't know what the name of them, the pictures are, but it's like, it goes by pictures, the NFTs. It's like buy this picture and it's going to be worth like $1 million or whatever. And people were doing a lot of scams with that. Like if you put in X amount and it's just like, it was so untraceable. The person just runs off with all of this money in the Ethernet and it just, you know, flies off into the oblivion essentially. So yeah, I absolutely do agree with that. What is your definition of financial intimacy and how do we build it?
So one of the things that is often pushed is financial literacy, and education is important, right? Knowing how things work is important. And if it were just an educational issue, we would get the right spreadsheet, we would plug in our numbers, the budget would be set, and we would be good to go. And we wouldn't even need to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, and money isn't complicated, right? Money is very simple. It's simple math. Building wealth is simple math. Mm-hmm. But people are complicated, right? We are complex. We are layered. We are dynamic. Financial trauma is real. The psychology of money is real. And every single person has a different relationship to money and a different psychology in the way they approach their finance. I was just talking to a good friend, and she's finishing up her graduate degree. She's an engineer. Her brother is an engineer, and she's like, "How did we grow up in the same house? And I'm great with money, and he's terrible, mm-hmm. right?" So we are complex, and this is why I am so passionate about helping people build financial intimacy instead of just literacy. And when I say intimacy, a lot of people think like physical intimacy. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about depth of relationship.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which means that money is a relationship. It's something you're in relationship with your entire life. It's a relationship that is required, and it's a relationship that you can avoid and ignore and can have a lot of tension or strain, or it's one you can intentionally cultivate. And so there are three sort of stages or aspects of financial intimacy. The first is emotional intimacy. That is understanding how you relate to money, how you feel about it, where you get triggered. Mm-hmm. Also dreaming, right? Like what is your vision for your wealthy life? How do you want money to support you and show up for you? Yeah. What do you want to tell money to do? How does it get to nourish you? Mm. And then there's intellectual intimacy, which is that financial literacy piece, mm-hmm. where we're learning and we're building systems and we're not only cultivating a relationship where, you know, we feel emotionally safe, where there's acknowledgement, right? Like if we're friends, but I ignore you and I never really talk to you and I only call you when I want something, that's not a great friendship.
Right.
Right. We have to learn each other and we have to know how to show up for each other on an emotional level and then on an intellectual level.
Yeah.
And then experiential intimacy is the beautiful thing that comes as a result of developing emotional and intellectual intimacy, which is that experience of, and anyone you've been in a relationship, like your ride or die people that you've been in a relationship with for a long time, mm-hmm. like, you know, they have your back, like in your bones, mm-hmm. right? And when you put the first two pieces in place, you begin to experience money in a way that allows your entire nervous system to relax because you're like, I know yes. that money is good. Because I have shown up for this relationship yeah. in a way that ensures that money is good. And that, especially if you've had, and most people have, any kind of financial trauma, that allows that financial trauma to slowly dissolve. So the next time you get triggered, it's not the same, right? You don't go into scarcity in the same way because you've put things in place. And the more time, the more that time goes on, the more you build that trust. Mm-hmm. And the more money is just this experience of something that's just there, right? Mm-hmm. It's the water that comes out of the fridge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love every single thing that you said. And it really just reminds me of what you were talking about a little earlier, where you were talking about having that respect. Having that respect mm-hmm. with money is a part of that emotional intimacy, because when you respect something, you show up for it. You do what it takes to make sure that the outcome is whatever it is that's a favorable outcome. And I think that's so important to view it in that way of having that financial intimacy, because it really does shift your entire perspective. It's like all those examples that you gave. How can I desire to have all these different things when I'm recklessly doing this? I'm engaging in these behaviors that, of course, the outcome is going to be negative because I'm not respecting the relationship. I don't have that positive emotional intimacy with money and with finances. Mm-hmm. Wow, that really blessed me just now. That really helped me. So thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. So I know that people always talk about budgeting. I go to this nail lady. She's very expensive, the nail lady. Mm-hmm.
Mine too. Yeah. I go to a Russian manicurist and it is a pretty penny.
Okay, I'm shaking right now because that's literally where I go. It's a Russian manicurist that I go to.
And it's next level, right?
You can't go back.
It's an investment. And I have not been since. And it is, I have reorchestrated my budget because of this.
Literally, I'm telling you, I make space for this. As soon as I get paid, mm-hmm. I pay her like in advance because I'm like, I need my nails done. I have to get it done. Yeah. Oh my, that is, I haven't met another person that gets
it. It's not common, but if you can find somebody, it's a dry manicure. Their cuticle work is beyond, and my nails were, they were crumbling when I first went to her, and now they're incredible. And this manicure, you guys can't see this because you're listening, but like, this is 4 weeks.
Oh my goodness. And it's,
I'm going on Friday.
I was really about to compliment you on your nails. I'm like, I just knew. I'm like, those look different.
Quality.
It's giving quality. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's funny. Okay, so my nail lady was telling me, she goes, Aisha, you don't need to budget. You just need to make more money. So that poses my next question. Is budgeting truly attainable, or is it just a case of making more money? And the reason why I also ask this is because for some reason, budgeting makes me feel super limited. And telling myself that I need to make more money almost seems more motivating to me, although I know that budgeting is completely harmless and it's the responsible thing to do. How does one budget successfully? Mm.
So this is a layered question. And I will say that your experience, I have the same experience. And it's nuanced. Let me see where I want to begin, because there were some layers to that question. How does one budget successfully? But you also touched on.
I touched on, is it the case of more money or.
More money. And I was in that place. I was like, oh, clearly money is the problem. I just need more of it. this is an and both conversation. But what I will say is that 70% of the financial content that's available for women has a scarcity framed connotation, right? Is about restriction, is about spending less. Whereas like 90 some percent of the financial content put out for men is about expansion, investing and growing wealth. Wow. So I am a firm believer in making more. So that's always part of the equation. If you can better your position, if you can negotiate a better salary for yourself, if mm-hmm. you can job hop and increase your income, right? Call in more, because money is a tool and it gets to support you. One. Two, the majority of the time, I find that when we actually do a financial audit, when we actually look at the numbers, there's a lot of unconscious spending. And there are a lot of places where money could be working better for you, could be in deeper alignment with what you value. Money is a value system, right? So it is just this exchange, and the way you spend should be reflective of the things you value most. So if you don't like the word budget, don't call it a budget. Mm-hmm. My friend Cindy Zuniga Sanchez says that she calls it a money plan. This is my money plan. I call it a wealth strategy.
Ooh, I like that.
This is my wealth strategy. And so at the beginning, or typically actually at the end of every month, I do a little check-in to see, to make sure that I showed up for all of, or that I put money to work in the ways that I said I was going to last month. Mm-hmm. And then I intentionally plan, and I use what's called a zero-based budget, which is essentially just an envelope system, right? Different envelopes for all of the things that are, that I want most, mm-hmm. right? Not all of the things that I want, all of the things that I want most. Mm-hmm. And I order those in priority. And then I tell money how it gets to show up for me this month, mm-hmm. right? Imagine telling a partner or telling your hairdresser, I don't know, do whatever you want, versus saying, this is how, this is exactly what I want.
Yeah.
Right? This is how I want it to feel. This is how much volume I want. This is the texture. This is the color. This is the shininess. Mm. I am just telling money how it gets to show up for me every month. And I thought when I first started budgeting, I was like, I don't want to, would just kind of shut down. Like, I'm like, this is boring. This is math. This sounds restrictive. Mm-hmm. And I thought of budgeting like most people would think about dieting. Yeah. I am not allowed to have. Mm-hmm. But my actual experience of implementing these systems was exactly the opposite. It was incredibly empowering because I was like, oh, I am telling myself exactly what I get to have. And I am ensuring that what I want most happens no matter what.
Yes.
Wow. And I'm ensuring that that money isn't going to anything that I actually don't care about. Like the time that I spent $43 post-mating 6 Mexican Cokes from Chipotle. Because I was lazy, you know? Yeah. And I was like, I feel like having a cola.
No, like that's literally me. Like I was
and my partner was like, you just got 4 Coca-Colas. How many did you drink? 1.
But I need extra.
Right. But I didn't. I was under the limit for not getting charged an extra charge. And he was like, how far is Chipotle? 8 blocks. Right. Like there were just ways that I was spending it was just numb and it wasn't intentional. And when I put that system in place, I was like, this is everything I want.
Yeah.
And I'm making sure that I get to have that. I'm making sure that I get to have, you know, there's a portion of my budget for the Russian manicure. There's a portion of my budget for Sephora every month because I love skincare, right? And there are the fixed expenses. And there's a portion of my budget that goes to investments and to building my future, to giving me the option at 40 to be like, I don't have to work. Mm-hmm. I will probably still work because what else would I do? But like, if that, you know, people call it that like fuck you money, that like mm-hmm. that optionality, the access, the opportunity that comes with it. And that's a priority for me. And for me personally, it feels so much better. You know, in my early 20s, I tried so hard to keep up with appearances. Mm-hmm. So I looked nice and I had a cute apartment. And I was constantly overdrafting in my account. Mm-hmm. And my car was like, got repossessed at one point. And I had to call my grandmother to bail me out. And on the inside, I was struggling. And that felt super hollow.
Yeah.
And I just recently bought myself a new vehicle. And in 2020, I put a Range Rover on my vision board.
That's my true. Oh, my
yeah. God. And I could have bought it at the end of that year. And for some reason, it didn't feel good. And it didn't feel good because I didn't have financial systems in place. And I wanted to buy it feeling wealthy and abundant, yes, not buying it feeling like I have all of these things. I have all of this stuff I haven't looked at and addressed. So what I did was I got my financial shit together.
Yeah.
And a few weeks ago, I went and bought that car. I negotiated my, I negotiated the contract and everything, and I got exactly what I wanted. And there's, and now when I drive it, it represents more than just looking cool to me.
Oh my gosh. This is really touching me right now. I'm like gonna cry. Like, wow. Like that, I felt that so deeply. Range Rover is, Range Rover Velar, our dynamic is my number one favorite car. White. I want a white car.
Yeah. And the one on my vision board was white. I actually ended up getting one that was Santorini black because, I ended up loving it even more.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh. And I said to myself, I want this thing. And I had all this anxiety about, and I was forcing myself into situations I wasn't ready for. I was doing that. And then I finally had the realization, as I've done some very deep self-work, and I'm a student of life and always a work in progress. But I said to myself, when I get this car, I want to make sure that I can effortlessly afford it because it represents that new phase of my life. It represents that shift in my money mindset. It represents so much more than I just got my dream car. It's so much more deeper than that for me, which is why I said, why am I rushing when there are other areas that need addressing? It doesn't make sense and it doesn't align. So I too am currently going through that same process that you came out of. So to me, this just was confirmation that like, wow, I really am in alignment because that really was so powerful. I mean, really, and it's, it really does take work, right, to come to that conclusion because a lot of people really are just like trying to keep up with the Joneses. I mean, we've all been guilty of it. You know, I remember when I first started my channel, I was making like pretty good money for like the first time. I never experienced anything like that. So I was like buying all this designer stuff. And I honestly haven't purchased anything designer really since because I got everything that I needed to get. But it changed my perception in the sense where every time I wanted to get something new, I'm like, why am I doing that?
Yeah.
I genuinely. Because
it doesn't feel, it's like having a giant engagement ring and showing it off and knowing that the relationship is broken.
Yeah.
And it's not sustainable.
Exactly.
Versus it's not just wanting the thing. It's wanting, it's who are you?
Yes.
When you're an experience of that thing.
Yes.
And I wanted to be a woman who felt wealthy, a woman who knew her financial houses were in order and that that vehicle was a reflection, was the tip of the iceberg, right? Of what I had built for myself, not the iceberg.
Right. Oh, that was so powerful. I absolutely love that. That leads me actually to my next question of what would you say are some like quick, tangible tools for financial independence?
So first and foremost, I think it's important to define what financial independence means to you, because that means something different to everyone. And if you don't have a vision, then the minute showing up for that relationship, if I don't have a vision of what I want to build, then the minute it gets hard, I'm going to abandon what I want most for what I want in the moment.
Yes.
Wow. So first, cultivate that vision of your wealthy life. What does it look like? How does it feel? Who are you? Right? What exists now that is not coming with you?
Wow. Yeah.
Right? That stress and that anxiety and that fear and that worry and then not knowing and the avoiding even looking at the bank account because it's getting to that because you made a bunch of money and then you went and you're wiling out with it. And then, you know, it's getting to that place where it's bad, but you don't want to look at it. If that's not coming with you, like you get to acknowledge that. And then from there, from that place of I am aware of where I want to go, then drop in and actually do a financial audit. Look at what where are you spending money, right? All of, on all of the credit cards, in the bank account, in the savings account, what is here? What's coming in? What's going out? And do an average. Look at 3 months, look at 6 months. If you're an entrepreneur, maybe you even want to look at a year, because some systems, many entrepreneurs do buy and I pay for the whole year at once. And when I first started my business, you know, the second year in, all of a sudden, randomly, $500 goes out to LegalZoom. And I was like, wait, what? I forgot.
Yeah.
So you want to plan in a way where you have a holistic understanding of what is coming in, mm-hmm. what is going out. Maybe if you are working on paying off debt, what your debt is, what those minimum payments are, because that's really a fixed expense. Mm-hmm. And then what those interest rates are, because you may not be in a rush to pay off a student loan that has a super low interest rate or a mortgage or something like that. You're like, actually, you know, that 4% that I'm paying on this, could my money could do more for me in an investment account where it can earn on average 8 to 10.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not a priority. Like, not all debt is bad. You know, intentional debt in business is called leverage. So just getting a holistic picture of here's what's going on. And then from there, you can kind of reverse engineer how you're going to get to those bigger financial goals.
Yes. I love that term too. Reverse engineer it. Yeah. That really does help working backwards. And even for myself, again, as I'm still a very much work in progress, I have learned that I downloaded QuickBooks for like self-employed mm-hmm. to implement those strategies and everything. And I do find that working backwards really helps. And another thing that I wanted to mention that you touched on is not wanting to look at your bank account. That energy is really harming for you, because yeah. I've definitely been guilty of that, where it's like, I am building up so much anxiety. I don't even want to open up the Capital One app. I'm like, I don't want to see what's going on there. And I said to myself, that doesn't make any sense. That's not in alignment with where I see myself, where I want to go. So yeah. I can't be afraid of digging in and diving in, because that's the only way. The only way out is through. And the mm-hmm. only way to uncover and unpack those things and fix it is to address it and to look at it. Yeah. So I think that's really significant.
If you have a cavity, it's not going to just get up and leave your mouth one day, right? Like, the only way to address it is going to the dentist.
Exactly.
If we're friends and we have a fight,
yeah.
For me, as somebody who's an overthinker, if we don't talk about it, then like, if it was a big fight, if we don't talk about it, then I'm going to sit and tell myself stories and yeah. I'm going to get more anxious and more worried and more uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And often it ends up being like, I don't know if you've ever had a closed chair, but when the lights are off in your bedroom and you see that shadow and it's a giant pile and it looks like a monster, and then you turn right. the lights on and it's just clothes.
Yes, that right? was last night.
Like, when you turn the lights on, you're like, oh yeah, this is just clothes.
Yeah.
And you can, like, you're safe.
Yes.
So knowing creates so much more space
yeah.
to not be anxious, to not be super ashamed. Mm-hmm. Lack of clarity just creates chaos. It creates confusion.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. As we begin to wrap this up, I am curious to hear personally your advice on taxes, because I know you briefly mentioned it earlier. Mm-hmm. Especially for some of my angels that are already in like a small business, or if they aspire to be an entrepreneur, I know that taxes and how to go about paying them or figuring them out is super confusing and intimidating. So what are your suggestions on paying taxes successfully? And how do you go about that while building capital in business? Because oftentimes they say, like, you need an accountant. Mm-hmm. And when you're starting your business, I don't think that many people know. I'm not even kidding. People don't even know to incorporate their names. They don't yeah. even know to pay taxes after that, how to go about doing that, because it's so overwhelming and not everyone has that knowledge.
Yeah. I do recommend consulting, at least when you first start your business or as soon as you can, a tax professional, just because often getting taxed as a sole proprietor versus maybe an S-corp or or some of the other ways that you can categorize your business, you often end up paying a lot more in taxes as a sole proprietor. So first and foremost, you know, just finding out, right? Like, how am I going to be taxed? How am I going to share with the government about the money I'm making? That's a great thing to know. But something, you know, you mentioned accountant, and I think a lot of people think I need to get an accountant or a bookkeeper, which means I need to make enough money to hire an accountant or a bookkeeper. Yeah. But traditional accounting and bookkeeping is just a person who is taking a historical record of financial events that have already occurred. Yeah. So this person is not helping you set up an intentional system to pay your taxes or to manage your cash flow or to plan for profit. And I've been helping entrepreneurs build small businesses for the last 5 years. Mm. And this is one of the areas that is most commonly overlooked. And when I'm working with a business owner, the first thing we do is look at those financial foundations, because money is the lifeblood of your business,
yeah,
right? Like, if you've got passion, but you are constantly like toothpaste or ramen noodles, it is not sustainable.
Right.
You can proactively plan for, this is what I need to pay myself. This is what the business costs. This is what taxes cost. Mm-hmm. And then I encourage you to make taxes an immediate expense. If you're just starting out, if it's like a side hustle, a great ratio is like, cut every payment that comes in, you cut it in half. Half goes to you, right into your pocket. Then 30% you put in a savings account for taxes. And then that additional 20% you can invest back into the business. Mm-hmm. And you have the option, right? Especially if it's a side hustle, you could take that percent you give yourself and put it back into the business and be aggressive. Mm-hmm. But always, 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 whatever money you have coming in, take 30% off the top, because 30% of it is not yours.
Wow.
And that may be, sometimes it's more like 20, but if you're taking 30%, then you are always in the clear. And what gets to happen at the end of the year or in April, when you go to pay your taxes, not only do you have a fund and you've planned for that, and when your taxes are like, oh, it's $24,000, that $30,000 you set aside, you're like, I get a $6,000 bonus.
Yes. I love that. Yeah. Wow. That's so good. That's so good.
And if you can automate paying them quarterly, and you can calculate that, you can look that up, or like any accountant can walk you through how to do that.
Yeah.
But that way you won't have to pay penalties.
Yeah.
End of the year.
Wow. That's really, really helpful. So lastly, I'm going to ask, what is one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self?
Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And that everything you've said resonated with me, but especially this, because recently I feel like my spirit, like the significance of mentoring. I don't think people really understand how important that is. And I know for me, as you know, philanthropic work is very important to me. And the more success that I will attain in my future and everything, I want to be able to help people that I, you know, in general, and especially people that I feel that one-on-one connection to. And it's so important, because you never know who really like needs your help. It's our job to pass the baton, you know, and to help service others. And not everyone's going to be able to maybe necessarily afford our services or whatever the case is. But sometimes there's that significant connection that you have with someone that you can offer your service to them. And also, if you happen to come across someone that you know can help you, reaching out, asking for help is not a bad thing. I remember I had this girl that reached out to me every single week for consults. And I just felt like, all right, obviously she needs someone to really talk to. At that point, I did not feel comfortable anymore. I feel like we had such a connection where I was getting that, you know, payment from her, because I just felt like called into something deeper for that specific connection. Mm-hmm. And so I leaned into that. And that was just my way of saying, like, all right, God, I'm leaning in. This is my little, you know, due diligence here. And again, that's not always the case for everyone, because mm-hmm. you do have to operate a business and things like that. But sometimes I just, when I feel led to just help someone, I do it. And then also I've become more comfortable now with asking for help, mm-hmm. being truly vulnerable and transparent. It's the only way that you're going to grow. It's the only way that you're going to actually get help, or your closed mouths don't get fed. They really don't. Yeah.
And there are tons of free resources out there. Once we have the courage to ask, we will start to find the things, the answers that we need. But I just remember being so afraid to even ask, being so afraid to admit that I was struggling, mm-hmm. because I thought that meant I was a failure. And I thought, you know, people would think there was something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And in reality, if I would have spoken up, I would have realized that, like, so many of my friends were also struggling.
Yeah.
And it could have been this beautiful healing moment. And we could have, you know, resourced each other.
Yeah.
So that, I just don't encourage, like, struggling in silence doesn't help you, and it doesn't help anyone you're in a relationship
with. Yes, I absolutely agree. And I think another reason why some people might feel shame is because if your appearance seems like everything is okay, mm-hmm. and you know that people are looking at you like, oh, you have it together, they're not even questioning anything, for you to, I guess, confirm that it is in fact the antithesis of what you're presenting, it's kind of embarrassing. It really is. Because it's like, wait a second, what do you mean? You have this car, you have this, all these different things that kind of seem on the outside like that equates to success or some sort of financial stability. And it can be in fact the opposite sometimes. You never really know. So I just want to say thank you so much, Hannah, for being a guest on today. Please share with us where we can all keep up with you.
Mm-hmm. You can find me at I Am Hannah Koenig on Instagram. That's Koenig. I love new friends, so you can actually hop in my DMs and I will engage with you. You can find me on my website at hannah-koenig.com. I don't really hang out there, so I encourage you to come hang out where I am on a recurring basis. And come say hi. Come let me know what you thought of this episode. Come let me know where you're at in your financial journey and where you need help. And if there's something I can help you with, I absolutely will. And if there's somebody I know who can do it better, I will refer you directly to them. And yeah, I want anyone listening to know that regardless of whatever mistakes you've made, regardless of your circumstances, you have an immense amount of financial power, mm-hmm. and you absolutely have the capacity to have a beautiful, rewarding, prosperous relationship with money. And money gets to be the reason that you get to say yes to the things that matter to you most.
Ah, that's so good. Thank you so much, Hannah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So there you have it, angels. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. I really appreciate it. All of Hannah's information will be in the show notes down below. And I'm super excited to incorporate more guests for you guys. Let me know in my DMs if you guys would like to see anyone in particular. And we will definitely try and get them on the show. I love you. I'll speak to you guys in my next episode.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.